Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
This Wednesday is Veterans Day. You're probably, I grew up in a military family, so I'm usually aware of that. And every year, something I like to do is I'd like to invite all veterans in the audience, if you so choose, to please stand so we can recognize you and thank you. We're probably the only New Thought Center in the country that has two veterans as their pastors or co-pastors here, David and I. I realize more and more people tell me that they have given up on watching the news because it's so bad. But even if you don't watch the news, like it or not, most of us still tend to keep up with most of what's going on in the world, even if we try to do our absolute best to try and avoid getting caught up in it, because now we get these TV screens everywhere, right? You've got all the news showing up. I was at Houston's the other day, went into the men's room. Don't want to get too personal, but you're standing at the urinal, and there in front of you is a TV screen. Actually, it's about this far away with CNN news on it right in front of you, and it's blocked so you can't tear it off the wall and throw it away. You know, it's kind of like, or turn it off or anything else. Because unfortunately, what we see when we look at a TV screen with the news on it, and when we go online or we look at CNN or Fox News or BBC, whatever you use for your news, it's frequently not a peaceful sight. What we usually see is some sort of a front page or a frontline story with pictures or film and video where the people of one particular country or one particular religion or race or political party are using weapons ranging from knives and guns and clubs to the greatest smart bomb technology that there is to try and destroy or dominate another group of people who are different from them in some supposedly significant way. And a lot of times the people on the other side are shooting back. Not always, but in many cases they are. All over the world right now on the news, we see pictures of death and destruction on a scale that boggles the mind, enough to make the most cynical observer sick to their stomach. But to me, the saddest thing of all, sadder than the destruction and the refugees and all these terrible things, is when people far away from the conflict sort of shake their heads and shrug their shoulders and go, it's really horrible, but what are you going to do? These people have been killing each other over there for centuries, for hundreds of years. I just hope it doesn't happen here. But if it does, we better have enough guns and bombs to protect ourselves so we can nuke them back to the Stone Age. That's kind of the mentality of what we call national defense. You know, that kind of phrase. That's what the politicians call it. As a race, we have come to accept war as unfortunate but normal. On a cost of doing business on a planet with limited space, limited resources, and a bunch of unstable people with really crazy ideas. And if you don't believe me, though I'm sure most of you do, just look around. At this time, we have wars. At this very moment, we have wars going on in Africa, Asia, Eastern Europe, South America, Central America, and several places in between. A number of years ago, I tore a cartoon out of the Wall Street Journal, and it was a man watching a newscast, and the commentator says, "The United Nations reported that fighting broke out today in a part of the world previously believed to be uninhabited." You know? So we got wars popping up in places we've never heard of. Now, some of you may be wondering, hey, I looked at the title, I thought he was going to talk about peace. Why is he talking about war on a Sunday morning in a spiritual center here in this beautiful, peaceful city? Why am I talking about death and destruction and mayhem and chaos and all these things in a place where we are normally focused on peace and love and kindness and giving and receiving and manifesting and all those things we talk about every day? Besides, we aren't warmongers, okay? We're peaceful. In all the churches around town, people are saying we are peaceful, God-fearing people. Don't you love that phrase, God-fearing? What we probably need is fewer God-fearing people and more war-fearing people, okay? That's kind of what we need, all right? You see, most Americans used to say that we don't start wars in this country. We just defend ourselves or our interests, whatever that happens to be. But in recent years, the legitimacy of that kind of thinking has been brought into question with good reason, because today, sometimes, we're not sure if we're the solution or if we're part of the problem. The lines get very, very shady, very murky. So I'm talking about this subject today, not just because war is a bad thing, which it is. It is also one of the most powerful and destructive physical manifestations of a belief of a mental equivalent, I'll explain that word in a minute if you don't know it, that the human race holds. And for those who are new to this teaching, a mental equivalent is a phrase Emmett Fox sort of coined this from science in the 40s, applying it to spirituality. A mental equivalent is an idea that is held so strongly, so clearly, and so powerfully in our consciousness and so completely that it cannot help but appear in our life. That's what a mental equivalent is. And war is that kind of an idea. The sad fact of the matter is the human race believes in war. We don't like it, most of us. We do what we can to prevent it. We try to end it as soon as possible after it starts, on our own terms, of course. But none of that matters because we believe in it so strongly. We believe that there are evil people out there who need to be fought and destroyed. We believe in fear. We believe that the only way to defend ourselves is by being militarily powerful, which is having more guns and bombs than other people. Most people who get involved in war, and we're talking worldwide here, not just in this room, whatever, believe in limited resources. They believe they can get more by being aggressive, or they believe that their beliefs are more important than the beliefs of other people. And in some cases, we see this now, people believe that God has made them strong so that they can impose God's will on other people. But frequently, God's will seems to sound a lot like theirs. That's what we notice. The truth is, and this is the key, if you don't remember anything else today, remember this. We do not believe in war because it exists in the world. War exists in the world because we believe in it. Because we believe in it. In the Science of Mind text, our textbook, Ernest Holmes says this. He said this, he wrote this in the 1920s and 30s in between the mistakes of World War I that we did not learn, which led to World War II. He said, the more the world arms for war, the more certain it is that there will be war. It's a great statement. It's really true. What he's saying is, as long as we see war as a necessary evil, as an unfortunate but unavoidable event that has existed since civilization began, it will continue to be part of our world. Or think about it this way. If we see war as the only way to solve certain problems, then our collective consciousness will see that we have plenty of problems that require it. That's the way it works. Or as Abraham Maslow said so well that many of you have heard this before, he says, when the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem starts to look like a nail. That's the mentality, okay? Now, there are probably not too many people in this room. There are fewer veterans in here today than I've seen in many of our Sundays. Probably not too many people in here who have experienced the direct consequences of an actual war, actually being in combat or losing someone close to you, a father, a sibling, a son or daughter, whatever, in a war. There may be a few, but I'm sure that's the minority. So I guess the question is this morning, if so few of us have actually been involved in wars, then what relevance does this discussion have for the rest of us here sitting in this peaceful city? You know, happy on a Sunday morning. How does a discussion about war relate to our daily lives and the way we relate to the people we meet and interact with on a daily basis? And the answer, and the point of my talk today, is that it relates a lot more than a lot of people recognize. So to show you what I mean, I'm going to ask you a few questions. And you don't have to raise your hand. In fact, I'd prefer that you didn't as you answered them, okay? But just listen and answer these questions for yourself in your mind. You know, maybe you're not a war veteran. Maybe you've never been in a battle zone. Maybe you've never been in the military. I know a number of you here were children of the 60s. Any of you college age around that in high school in the 60s? I know some of you are a lot younger than that. But a few of us were there, okay, who demonstrated against the war in Vietnam. That was a big deal when I was in college. I was in a military school, so we didn't demonstrate against the war, obviously. Maybe you were against Desert Storm and Iraqi freedom and all these wars from recent years. But there are a lot of different kinds of wars and a lot of different kinds of battles. And not all of them include bombs and guns and bullets. So let me ask you this. Once again, just answer in your own mind. Don't raise your hand. Has anyone here ever been a participant in a very angry and bitter divorce or separation? Okay? Or maybe involved in a violent relationship? Has anyone here ever been involved in a nasty lawsuit where you felt unfairly persecuted and threatened? Has anyone here ever had a life-threatening disease where you felt that the medical community or the insurance companies didn't seem to care what happened? Okay, maybe one or two. Has anyone here ever had someone lie to you, take advantage of you, and break your heart and walk out the door? All right. Does anyone here have a parent or a child or a sibling that did something to you so terrible that you haven't spoken to them for 10 years or more? Have you ever felt persecuted because of your race, your sexual orientation, your lifestyle, or your gender, and felt that you had to fight back against the people who were persecuting you? Here's a relevant one. I like this. Have you now or have you ever hated a specific political party or specific politician? Okay? All of us are chuckling, believe me. And if you've never had to deal with any of these events, serious life events, have you ever been cut off or tailgated on Georgia 400 by a rich guy in a, by a rich guy in a Mercedes or a young kid in a pickup truck or some other person not of your kind, all right? Who made you so angry that you wanted to chase them down and run them off the road, okay? Any of these sound familiar to anyone? You can raise your hand. We won't be specific. Good. Okay. Now I'm talking to some veterans, okay? Real veterans of life. You see, the feelings that come up in all of us when things like these happen in our life are very similar to the feelings of anger and fear and aggression and helplessness and self-righteousness that are expressed so powerfully and so destructively by both sides in times of war. The consciousness is really the same. It's simply a matter of degree. And when you're in the middle of conflicts like these, they can seem overwhelming. You start to see danger all around. The dictionary, if you go to war, it describes war very simply. It says as it is active hostility or contention or conflict. Very interesting. Notice it didn't say you have to have bullets flying or bombs being dropped. There are a lot of situations in life where both sides can suffer a lot of damage if they get caught up in the wrong way of thinking. But the good news is, the spiritual message of this is, it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't, and I'll tell you why. Think for a minute about the thought process involved. When we find ourselves in a serious conflict, when we feel threatened, our tendency is to label the other person as our enemy. Okay? As our enemy. We see them as someone who's threatening either our freedom, our money, our body, our possessions. We see them as a power separate from us, trying to take something from us, or a power trying to force something undesirable upon us. So what do? Almost automatically, how do we respond? Well, our adrenaline starts kicking up. We harden ourselves to fight back and defend ourselves. We get very clear in our mind why we are right and they are wrong. All of these things happen. We take stock of all the weapons at our disposal and we prepare to use them. We enlist other people to support us, to be on our side. And when we have worked ourselves up to a sufficiently self-righteous fever pitch, we return the attack. We return the attack. And then the war begins. That's when the war begins. And at that point, the conflict begins to take on a life of its own, and we're just along for the ride. We're just along for the ride. The important thing to realize here is that once a conflict begins, once we have gotten into this dance, it's very difficult to end. Very, very difficult to end. All right? Once we've joined the battle, our one objective is to win. And the only options we focus on are winning or losing. But a very wise person, a woman, I can't remember her name, but it was in the middle of the 19th century, once made the statement, "You can no more win a war than you can win an earthquake." Very good statement. Now, I'm not just talking here about settling a difference of opinion. We should be able to do that. I'm talking about something more serious. Conflict at this level of consciousness is a consciousness that's out of control. And the time to deal with it is not after it started when everyone is trying to win. It's the time before. All right? It's always difficult to achieve a truce or an understanding when people are attacking each other. So the best time to end these conflicts is before it begins. And the only way we can do this is by having within ourselves all the time, not just when we're in potential conflict, all the time, in every situation, a consciousness that accepts peace and harmony as the only relationship that is ever, ever, ever acceptable. Ever acceptable, both in our life and in the world. You see, when two or more people are in serious conflict, whether they're shooting each other from two foxholes or whether they're yelling through their lawyers in a courtroom, the problem is not that they don't see each other as human, and it's not even that they see themselves as being better than the other person. The problem is they don't see each other as God. As God, okay? It's simply a matter of what we call duality, which is the belief that God can be in one place and not in another, or that God takes sides with one team or one group rather than another. And most people are firmly convinced which side God is on, and it always happens to be their own. Always happens to be their own. I mean, they can accept that they are an individual expression of God, but they don't believe it about the other person. And that's usually the crux of the problem. You see, the truth is, it is almost impossible, virtually impossible, to look at another person with anger or hatred or resentment if we first see them as a spiritual being just like us. First see them as a spiritual being just like us, okay? That doesn't mean we need to see their behavior as acceptable, okay? But seeing all other people without exception as divine, I love that word, makes it easier to look for a solution that supports us both in expressing life better, particularly when the situation we find ourselves in has the potential to destroy us both. Now, I realize it's not always easy to do this. Okay, I know it for myself and I know it for the rest of you. But that's only because we weren't raised this way. Most of the world doesn't even think this way. I mean, who could look at people like, you know, Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein, whatever, Hitler, or a mass murderer like Charles Manson, saw him on TV the other day. Who could look at these things and see God expressing in the world? Very, very hard to do. Who could look at the massacres in Rwanda, like Ursula was just talking about, or Bosnia, or the Sudan, or look at the shootings in Charleston and Oregon and Sandy Hook and still see the presence of a divine intelligence? It's very difficult to do, okay? But the answer is we can and we must. We can and we must. Every great teacher has taught us this. Same words. Violence begets violence. Anger provokes further anger. Anything we fight always grows stronger. Anything we fight always grows stronger. In the Christian Bible, many of us were raised with that. The teacher Jesus says, love your enemies, bless those that curse you, do good to those who hate you, pray for those who spitefully use you. Those are pretty direct words. Pretty direct words. And it sounds a little naive until you understand that it's actually a very perfect expression of the way the law works, spiritual law, in our everyday life. I mean, Gandhi was a great example of this. So was Dr. King. So is Suyin Kong Ki in Burma right now, if you're familiar with her. When we do this, it doesn't mean we're weak or naive. Not at all. A lot of people have always had trouble with this idea of turning the other cheek. That old statement, if your enemy smites you, I love that word, turn the other cheek. Now, I remember when I was in the military, that didn't make sense to me. That wasn't what they were teaching us to do. I mean, if somebody walks up and smacks you in the face, it seemed to me pretty silly to turn the other cheek to them. But then one day, long after I get into this teaching, it made perfect sense. I heard Kennedy, Dr. Schultz, say something, and he said, you know, he said, I don't like being smited any more than anybody else, all right? But you can't turn your cheek without turning your eyes to look at something from an entirely different perspective. which made perfect sense to me, okay? So we look at the person differently. We create an atmosphere where they can behave differently and we can behave differently, okay? We look at them with a perspective that encourages a peaceful solution, okay? We look at it from a higher viewpoint, which brings up another point we need to understand. Any conflict or adversity in our life, any violence in our life is there because there is something in our consciousness that's allowing it to be there. I didn't say it brought it in and forced it. We can get into a discussion on that based on metaphysics. But it is allowing it to be there. And that's not a criticism of anybody's belief. It's simply a statement of how the law works. There's a man by the name of Arnold Patent. I think he's still alive. I heard him speak 30, 35 years ago. He was a New Thought teacher at the time. And he was doing a seminar talking about this point. And right in the middle of the seminar, a man jumped up and said, "I've been mugged outside my apartment 3 times this year. Are you trying to tell me that I attracted it?" Good question. And what Patton said very quietly was, "I certainly hope so, or else how do you hope to change it?" How do you hope to change it? That's a very powerful statement. Here's another example, personal one, true story. Everybody loves true stories. Years ago here in Atlanta, I was having a conversation with a woman I met, and I asked her where she lived, conversation, and she told me she lived on 8 acres far outside the city in a rural area. You know about OTP and ITP. She lived FBS. That's far beyond Snellville, okay? All right. And she says, "Where do you live?" And I told her I live in Midtown Atlanta. I was living in Morningside at the time. And her first question was, what do you think her first question was? "What kind of a gun do you have?" First question, honest to God. And when I told her that I didn't own a gun and didn't have any immediate inclination to go out and buy one, she looked at me like I was an idiot. Like I was an idiot. And she said, "My husband and I have 2 handguns, several rifles, and 3 German Shepherds on our 8 acres. And then she said to me, second question, "How often have you been robbed?" And I told her, in 20 years in Midtown, I'd never been robbed once. So then, just sort of trying to be sociable, I said, "How often have you been robbed, you know?" And she said, 3 times, and they better not come back because this time I'm ready for them. This time I'm ready for them. What kind of a consciousness is that? You know, I mean, I never ran into her again. I'm just curious if the robbers ever came back. You know, it'd be an interesting statement. You've heard it time and time again from this platform. We don't get what we want in life. We get what we expect. We get what we expect. That means if you don't like what's happening in your life, if you don't like the situation you're in, then examine your expectations. That's where the introspection needs to come. Examine your beliefs about how you think the world works. Is justifiable conflict a part of your beliefs? Is it a part of your beliefs? Now, because we are not saints, most of us, let's get real here for just a minute. Sometimes we get into a situation that we should have been able to avoid, but now we're in it and we don't know what else to do. Okay? We lost our cool. Maybe it's a fight with our mother, a fight with our spouse, a fight with one of our neighbors, a dispute, whatever. One or both of us, usually both of us, lost our cool, and now everybody's really, really angry. So how can we get back to a peaceful coexistence with as little damage as possible to both sides? Normal situation. Well, the first thing we need to do is to remind ourselves of the first step in affirmative prayer, which says that God is all there is. First step. Okay, that means God is always on both sides of every conflict and everywhere in between and around. That's what it means when you say God is all there is, no matter what is going on. This infinite intelligence we talk about that we call God is always able to bring forth a perfectly logical, intelligent, peaceful solution if we can open ourselves up to it. So a violent confrontation of any kind, whatever level, whether it's personal or international, is simply a misuse of the most fundamental spiritual laws, the laws of creation, the laws of love, the laws of life, all the laws that we talk about here. Okay? Dr. Holmes writes this. He says, "God must be harmonious If there were an element of disharmony, discord, or decay anywhere in its nature, it would destroy itself because it's infinitely powerful. So it must be harmonious. Okay? It's important to remember that contrary to what many of us learned in our old religion, God is only and always creative. It's not destructive. It's not destructive. So if you find yourself in a potentially destructive situation, remember that you're never trapped and you're never alone. God, Spirit, whatever you want to call it, is always there in the form of a higher use of your consciousness or my consciousness, okay? Ready to provide a creative, peaceful, life-enhancing solution because there's a power for good in the universe and we can use it. That's what we teach here. That's what we believe. Now, the next thing we do need to do is to keep the situation in perspective. No matter what's happening around us, no matter how dangerous, no matter how hopeless it appears to be, no matter how horrible things may look, we still live in a world of health, love, prosperity, and abundance. All the rest is just appearance. But the world is a world. So instead of fighting with all our might against other people or against sickness or against hatred or financial ruin, we can make better use of our energy by affirming their opposite. That's one of the keys to affirmative prayer. That means we start to focus on health, love, and prosperity instead of sickness, hatred, and lack. It means we need to stop giving the power of our belief to the things that seem to be causing us pain. Because no one can do or take anything from us that'll diminish us unless we give it away. Unless we give it away, okay? We are a perfect idea in the mind of God, and nothing anyone can do can make us less than that. Can make us less than that. So, when that BMW cuts you off in the interstate, okay, or the connector or whatever, just smile, take a deep breath, and say out loud, I am driving peacefully and harmoniously within the mind of God. Within the mind of God, and let it go. Let it go. Give him the finger if you got to, and then let it go, okay? And then let it go, all right? Okay, if it makes you feel better, all right? If anger or violence starts to flare up around you, even if you feel like you're not part of it, guess what? If it's around you, you're a part of it. You're a part of it, which is great, because now you can be part of the healing. You can now be part of the healing. So put yourself in a place of physical safety first. That's just common sense. But as soon as you can, as soon as you get away from what's going on or do what you have to do, also put yourself in a place of mental and spiritual safety. Mental and spiritual safety. Affirm that you are safe and well, and so is everyone involved, and nothing and no one can take from you the peace that you choose to feel inside. You see, wars are always fought over boundaries, whether those boundaries are geographical, political, religious, or psychological. Those boundaries. The point is, those boundaries are never real. They are always human-made. They're always artificial. We only have earthly boundaries in our life if we accept them. We have no spiritual boundaries. We have no spiritual boundaries. And if we're clear that God doesn't have any boundaries either, then we never have to be afraid of anything. Anything. Wars are never fought between people who see themselves as having everything in common. They aren't, okay? They're fought between people who focus on their differences. Only on people who focus on their differences. War or any violent confrontation between people is not a physical thing. It is a state of consciousness that we choose to allow. To allow. Albert Camus, the great French philosopher, said this. He said, we used to wonder where war lived, what it was that made it so vile, and now we realize that we know where it lives, that it is inside ourselves. It is inside ourselves. So as we begin to see peace and harmony as the normal state of the world, without getting distracted by the appearances and what's on the TV, as we recognize the presence of God in all people, all places, and all things, war will begin to disappear. It will immediately begin Won't disappear all at once, but it will begin to disappear from the face of the earth. But it has to begin in here first, okay? In our consciousness, in all of our thoughts, in all of our actions, in all of our relationships, in all of our affairs, all the time, until it creates a massive change in the race consciousness that creates this society in which we live. And that's the only way that it's going to happen. But I promise you, it is worth the effort. And one day, I truly believe that it will happen. No more veterans. We may even be able to get rid of Veterans Day and call it Peace Day. Wouldn't that be a great idea? This is the truth in your life. And this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Thank you. Okay. Let's take a moment. Difficult subject. Touches all of us, whether directly or not. And let's recognize that there is a power in the world that is only love. There is a power in the world that is only peace and kindness and understanding and joy. And we call this power God. We'll give it that name. And we recognize that this power is all there is. So just like the sun continues to shine, even when our eyes are closed or we perceive darkness, we recognize that peace is always ready to shine no matter what darkness humans bring to the earth. So any darkness that we bring to the world, darkness of the spirit, darkness of our human existence, we recognize that the light is always there, ready to shine, and all it takes is a change of mind. So as I look at the things happening in the world, the terrible things, those people who feel that by being destructive, by bringing death, they feel that they're making positive change, I see a positive change in their consciousness. I recognize that we have the power to create a belief, a consciousness within the world that no longer accepts this behavior. And whatever we need to do to overcome it, I know that we will be able to do it. But I see these solutions coming one day, not just from military might, which may be necessary because we have put ourselves in a position where we believe it's necessary, but I see one day this changing. I see people beginning to see each other as God, to respect each other's religions and lifestyles and appearance and politics and all these things. So I know for this world, acceptance, kindness, and compassion. As the Dalai Lama teaches, as Jesus taught, as the Buddha taught, as so many great teachers have taught and continue to teach through their writings and their words. Recognizing this, I give thanks for the peace that is ready to be recognized. I give thanks for those who give of themselves to support the process of peace in the world in whatever way they do it. And I support the greater idea that allows life to expand for all people, to let people be safe, to raise their families without fear, without danger, for children to grow and be fed and be nurtured and loved. This is the world I see. This is the world I accept in consciousness. And knowing that this is truly a perfect idea in the mind of God, I accept it and I release it, knowing it is already so, and so it is.